from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The failures of 9/11 were many and terrible, but it was the future of American security that got the biggest emphasis from the 9/11 Commission in its final report today. New strategies, new structures, new leadership. At today's press conference, former Congressman Lee Hamilton, vice chair of the commission, urged a new approach on many fronts, an approach that will challenge Washington's capacity for change.
The strategy must be balanced. It must integrate all the elements of national power, diplomacy, intelligence, covert action, law enforcement, economic policy, foreign aid, homeland defense, and military strength. There is no silver bullet or decisive blow that can defeat Islamist terrorism. It will take unity of effort and sustained and effective use of every tool at our disposal.
Tonight, On Point, the final 9/11 Commission report and the future of American national security. We begin in Washington with a look at how the report is being received in the Capitol. David Sanger is White House correspondent for the New York Times. David, thanks for being with us tonight.
Always good to be with you, Tom.
So there it is. It's huge. It's out in public. Everybody's talking about it. How is it being received in the Capitol? How's it being spun in the Capitol, David?
Well, let's talk about reception first and spin second. The report is, as you say, very large. There were not many surprises in it because we had seen so many of the staff reports, you recall, as this came along.
All along the way.
Right. And so the basic narrative of what had gone wrong was not especially surprising. There were a couple of interesting things, though. They were the recommendations were quite definitive, particularly in the commission's insistence that we need a director of national intelligence to oversee and have budgetary control over all of the 15 different intelligence agencies.
So are people up in arms about that? Is the CIA barring the door, the FBI nailing theirs shut too?
No, they were all smart enough today to take the position, as the White House did, that this was a comprehensive report full of good and interesting ideas that need to be debated out. Now, of course, we all know the CIA is not interested in losing control over these issues. We all know the Defense Department, which controls 90% of the budget for intelligence, does not want to lose its budgetary control over it. So that's a fight for another day. But the way these are done, you don't come right out the door the day the recommendations come out.
Kind of rope-a-dope. You say, okay, we'll think about it.
We'll think about it. Now, a number of us went in to see Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor, today.
Hmm.
And
yeah.
She took the position that many of the recommendations were quite good, but that many of them needed congressional approval as well. These were not things the executive branch could do by fiat. And so she said these are going to take time, and you want to think through the implications and not have the law of unintended consequences take place. And there have been moments when, of course, we've seen government reorganizations have created as many problems as they solved.
Fair enough.
So, of course, that can
also be an excuse for not doing anything.
Right. And, of course, in a system like Washington, where inertia is the natural motion of the day anyway, that can be a particularly difficult challenge. And, you know, to say that Congress has got to get involved is to avoid mention of the fact that Congress has about 3 or 4 working weeks left this year because of the election.
Right.
And so these issues aren't even going to really get seriously taken up. In fact, there's some question about whether the president will announce a series of broad reforms himself.
And, of course, the election means spinning, of course. It would always be spun, but this year, above all, with the presidential vote coming up, how did Washington look on that front today?
Well, that began, Tom, long before this report was out, because the question of the day was, who was going to look worse? The Clinton administration, which dealt with the terrorist issues for 8 years, or at least the last 4 or 5 years, its administration dealing with Al-Qaeda, or the Bush administration, which dealt with it, of course, for 9 months before 9/11 and has been dominated by these issues ever since. And the answer was nobody came off looking that good, although the commission was more complimentary of the way the Clinton administration had gone and dealt with these issues than they were than we had really expected. They had also taken the position that President Bush in the months since, or the years since September 11th, had done pretty well on the military side, pretty well in Afghanistan, but hadn't even begun to address the big and hard questions in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, those countries that could become sanctuaries for terror.
David Singer, how do you think the Bush reelection campaign is going to absorb the report and its implications today? What will it look like when it comes back out, you know, through that spin machine?
The line we were getting today was, isn't it wonderful that this commission has come out and basically come along and endorse the major lines that we're already following?
So they put their arm around it and say it's our best friend.
That's right. That's right. And sort of ignore the significant differences as, well, you know, it's big and complex and 575 pages, and you couldn't expect we'd agree with all of it, but we'll agree with some of it.
And your sense of the openings potentially for the Kerry campaign here, is this going to give them a battering ram or not really?
It certainly gives them a fair bit of ammunition, and here's where. First of all, the commission's recommendation on the director of national intelligence, the sort of intelligence czar, is very close to what Senator Kerry and what a number of Democrats have argued for some time. White House said they, you know, easier to do from the campaign trail than from actually trying to run the system. Secondly, many of the arguments that the commission report makes about how we have overemphasized military solutions and not done enough in public diplomacy and other diplomatic approaches also fits with a main Kerry theme. But there's stuff in here for the Bush administration as well, because the commission basically came out and said, you know, preemption isn't a bad idea when you see an area that is developing that, you know, we need to strike at, and basically makes the argument that we should have gone and taken out the Taliban, which was supporting al-Qaeda, long before we actually did. We waited until September 11th to do it.
And David, a last question. I've been asking it all day. Do you think that this commission's report, after all the anticipation around it, all the controversy about even getting the commission launched, the bipartisan nature, the gravity of what they're saying today, does it have the momentum, the power to be an engine for change, or is this going to end up on a shelf waiting for another terrorist attack?
Well, they're trying a different strategy, which is to get out and lobby heavily for their suggestions, stay on TV, agreeing to come back in a year and sort of, you know, press the case.
Right.
And there was also some dark warnings they issued today, which was if there is another terrorist strike, and many people anticipate that there will be at some point, any government of the United States has to know now that it has been specifically warned. And if it sits on its hands on some of these changes, would have to answer the question later on, why?
Why didn't you do something? David, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
David Singer, White House correspondent for The New York Times. He spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about the future of American security and the final recommendations of the 9/11 Commission delivered today. So there's no silver bullet, but there is a lot of urgency. What do you think? You can join this conversation. What is the right direction for overhauling the country's national security? Is it time for a super intelligence czar? Would that make a difference? Will the CIA, the FBI be reformed? Is the greater challenge in revamping America's security institutions or winning over the Islamic world? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is retired Admiral Stansfield Turner, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency and senior research scholar at the Center for International and Security Studies at the University of Maryland. Good evening and welcome, Stansfield Turner.
Good evening. Nice to be with you.
Wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us. Also with us tonight from New York, Stephen Flynn, senior fellow for national security at the Council on Foreign Relations, a former Coast Guard commander and author of America the Vulnerable, How Our Government is Failing to Protect Us from Terrorism. Good evening and welcome, Stephen Flynn.
I'm delighted to be here tonight.
Wonderful to have you. Stansfield Turner, to you first. You've sat at the top of the CIA and seen what it takes just to keep that agency going. Now we've got a huge buffet of recommendations for change here. What do you make of the general thrust of the 9/11 Commission's recommendations today?
Well, I am very enthusiastic about them. I think they are all pointed in the right direction. One can argue about details here and there, but the basic thrust that we can't continue to have a $40 billion intelligence operation divided between 15 separate agencies with nobody in overall charge. We've just got to be able to set priorities, to develop teamwork, to keep people from squirreling information here and there instead of sharing it when it is appropriate. It's time we faced this issue. It's been recommended over and over and over again, but I hope this one is really going to have an impact.
So you're saying get that intelligence czar, that overarching person with responsibility on top of all these intelligence agencies?
Absolutely. Not if it's going to be called a czar. That's a pejorative
term,
death. And we ought not to use it here. But absolutely, yes, we need somebody in charge. But let me point out, when you call it a czar, you're really suggesting this is a big change. It's not a big change that they're recommending. We today, by law, have a director of Central Intelligence who is charged with the responsibility of coordinating the 15 intelligence agencies.
Right.
What this law provides, however, is that the same individual will be the head of the CIA, one of those 15 agencies. In a sense, that's a conflict of interest. It's also a bigger workload than an individual can handle. So the committee is recommending we split those into two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not creating a new bureaucracy. The director of Central Intelligence already has a staff who's dedicated just to this job of coordination, and he has another staff to run the CIA. So we're not really making something brand new. But what we are going to do, if this recommendation comes through, is give the director of Central Intelligence, or whatever we call him or her, more authority. Instead of just the responsibility to coordinate, we hope this will give that individual some authority, like control over the budgets, control over the dissemination of information within the intelligence world, like priorities of what we're going to collect intelligence on and analyze intelligence on. These are just fundamental ways in which you run any kind of an organization, and we don't have that kind of direction today.
Stansfield Turner, we're going to dig into that in a lot more detail, but Stephen Flynn, let me put the big question to you first. What about the overall thrust of the recommendations here today? Do you see them lining up with a potential future successful orientation of the United States around national security?
I think overall the commission has done us a tremendous service by going back and looking at the facts of what happened and identifying some key systemic weaknesses that many had long recognized before that we just refused to address. And we're frankly just getting brushed over even in the aftermath of 9/11. So, and the fact that it was a bipartisan commission, the fact that it was unanimous, means that the American people can say, okay, here's a credible group of people who are no longer in government right now, taking a fresh look at the problem and saying, look, we got to deal and confront these realities. I think many of the things they identify here are requisite things that we need to come to grips, but they're not sufficient.
Such as?
The biggest thing is America being a soft target. The fact that there is so much here in the way that the critical infrastructure, the critical networks that underpin our power are the most tempting targets for any current and future enemies.
They talk about that, but you're saying not enough weight on it?
Well, they talk about it basically if we can prevent these things from happening at the border primarily, but not a whole lot. It's pretty soft stuff on what specifically can be done on things like our food supplies, our chemical industries.
Why do you think they would dodge that or not address it in more depth here?
Well, I think the charter really didn't push them too much in that direction. They'd have to broaden the understanding. And this is one of my main critiques here overall. We're not coming to grips with the core reality of 9/11, which one is the terrorists were here. They didn't have to import a weapon of mass destruction. They converted, in this case, domestic airlines, but they took what we depend upon and turned it on to us. And most of the consequences, the real cost to our society that flowed from the attack, were what we imposed on ourselves because we essentially got spooked with recognition of our vulnerability. So there is a lot to do that transcends even beyond the very valuable service the 9/11 Commission has done.
Even more than we've had put up today, and today has been put up a lot. Stephen Flynn, please stand by. Stansfield Turner, former head of the CIA, please stand by as well. We're talking tonight about the future of American national security as recommended today by the 9/11 Commission. You can join the conversation. Will these sweeping recommendations be implemented or shelved? And what do you feel coming out of Washington, resolve or bureaucratic inertia? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
800-253-8451.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the future, about the national security recommendations delivered today by the 9/11 Commission. You can join our conversation tonight. Is there the national will to reconfigure in many dimensions for an age of new threats? Is the country adapting quickly enough to keep up with those threats? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. A big report out today from the 9/11 Commission. Here, speaking to Global Strategy, was Vice Chair of the Commission, former Congressman Lee Hamilton of Indiana, saying the United States needs to address the root causes of terrorism.
We need to put forth an agenda of opportunity, economic, educational, political, so that young people in the Arab and Islamic world have peaceful and productive avenues for expression and hope. We need to join the battle of ideas within the Islamic world, communicating hope instead of despair, progress in place of persecution, life instead of death. This message should be matched by policies that encourage and support the majority of Muslims who share these goals.
The 9/11 Commission's Vice Chair Lee Hamilton today in Washington. We are joined tonight from Washington by Stansfield Turner, former director of the CIA from 1977 to 1981. From New York by Stephen Flynn, Senior Fellow for National Security at the Council on Foreign Relations. And now from Cambridge, Massachusetts, by Juliet Kayyem, Senior Fellow at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She served as former House Minority Leader Richard Gephardt's, was appointed by him to the National Commission on Terrorism. Good evening and welcome, Juliet Kayyem.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Juliet, two big wings to the recommendations today. One on organizing government, the U.S. government, and we'll talk about that. The second, that we just heard Lee Hamilton speaking to, what they call a new global strategy, what to do at the global strategy level. And here, talking about pushing opportunity toward the Middle East and a battle of ideas, how effective, how engaged, how implementable do you see these recommendations?
Well, this part of the book, which we all probably have now, is a lot, I would say, weaker than, I think, the more specific, what we might call the architectural changes to both the CIA, the FBI, and DHS. It's, you know, what Joe Nye calls soft power. It's the sort of stuff that is going to convince the Islamic world that there is an alternative and a viable alternative to terrorism.
And why do you say weaker? They seem to pay quite a bit of attention to it in their remarks today.
Well, in their remarks, if you actually look at the recommendations, it's not that they're very sort of broad feel-good recommendations, which everyone agrees on. I mean, sort of have more cultural exchanges, commit to the moderate wings of these various countries that are going through incredible changes themselves internally. But, you know, this stuff is, in some ways, while, you know, changing the CIA might be really hard, this stuff is sort of hearts and minds, I think, is much harder and hard to write about and talk about from the Commission's perspective because, one, this is decades and generations of change. I mean, when you think of, for example, Abu Ghraib and even Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld's admission that it would be maybe two generations before we got over those images.
Right.
And also, I mean, because it really does get to the core of what we talked about in your previous hour, sort of our relationship to the Middle East and, of course, our relationship to Israel. Without tough discussions about that, tough discussions about our relationship with Saudi Arabia as well, we're only sort of fixing half the pie. And I think the recommendations are important that the Commission made, but certainly ones that are not going to be fixed either within, you know, this congressional cycle or even the next administration.
Stansfield Turner, how about it on this weighing strategy and structure? Clearly, there needs to be worked on both. Do you think the Commission got the balance right here today? And where would you put the first most focused effort?
Oh, we've got to put the first effort on stopping the terrorists and their ambitions to do damage to us. You have to live today in order to solve the long-term problem of why there is terrorism in the world. What we have to keep in mind, I believe, is that we can't continue with this unilateral approach of the Bush administration to dealing with the rest of the world, Because if we are going to solve these problems that generate terrorism, we've got to have the cooperation of many, many other nations. Our intelligence can't be in the jungles of Indonesia and the mountains of Afghanistan and the deserts of Yemen. It's got to have help from other people. And we have got to become much more conscious of what's going on in those other areas of the world and not think that we can do it all on our own.
So, Stephen Flynn, on that same front, we're talking here, Lee Hamilton's talking about pushing opportunity to the Middle East, about a battle of ideas. Do you see the United States configured or recommendations here that will leave it configured to act on that kind of recommendation, strategic recommendation?
Well, it's clearly is nothing to be against in trying to do that. It certainly is eminently sensible that America should be much more engaged and much more willing to win over the hearts and minds, and that's real commitment of resources and effort. And it won't be done tomorrow. It will take a long-term effort. And the Commission, again, does us a service reminding that it's Americans' values and interests at the end of the day, proliferating the world, that really give us the best edge on our security, not our brute use of force. But the core reality, I think, we're still struggling with. See, for me, what happened on 9/11, quite simply, is how warfare will be conducted against the United States for the foreseeable future. The United States today is spending more on conventional military capability than the next 30 nations combined. There's never been a time in human history where as much military power has been concentrated in the hands of a single power as what the United States possesses today. That says to me about three possibilities about the future of warfare. One, you'll have very dumb adversaries who will take this stuff on from time to time. Two, war is going to be obsolete. It's going to wither away because we're so powerful. Or three, warfare changes. The warfare of tomorrow is to use catastrophic terrorism at the non-military elements of our power because it's the only way to do it.
Well, that's exactly why we're sitting here tonight. That's what happened, right?
That's exactly right, and it's a present danger right now. Yes, we got to fix intelligence, but we won't have good quality tactical intelligence for at least another decade. We won't have win over the hearts and minds of all the angry young men out there right now who have access to means of highly destructive things if we do all the things this commission asks us to do for probably another decade. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing them. By all means, we should. But we face the fact that our society is incredibly exposed to these folks right now, and there's things that we could be doing to make it far less attractive for these people to conduct catastrophic terrorism as a means of warfare.
Let me come back to you on that. I want to turn to Juliet for a moment. Juliet, Stansfield Turner says, bring on the super director of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Flynn says it's going to be a decade before we can get this fixed up. A, are we going to be that naked for that long? And B, what do you think of the new Stansfield doesn't like the word czar, but I'm not sure what the good shorthand is here. But so the new intelligence czar, does it work?
Oh, I think it can. I mean, I'm not convinced it would work under this administration when you have the present CIA director saying he doesn't want it, and certainly Condoleezza Rice sort of, you know, not embracing it today by saying, well, it's Congress's decision. That's hardly an endorsement. So it won't work, I think, in this present political environment, and we'll just see whether the 911 families or the election and sort of concerns by American citizens will get this administration or the next administration to embrace it. And I agree with both Stephen and Admiral, of course, it's a two-track response, and that the immediate threat we have to deal with immediately. And in this sense, I thought the commission report was, without saying so, incredibly damning of the Department of Homeland Security, because if you remember the lead-up to the Department of Homeland Security, I thought, at least reading it and reading its statutes, that a lot of the problems that they address even today were ones that should have been or could have been, might have been cured by an effective Department of Homeland Security, especially the priorities issue. What, in fact, are the priorities for this nation in Homeland Security? How are we going to affect them? And why is more money going per capita to citizens of Montana over citizens of New York or Boston?
Are you saying that Tom Ridge should already be playing this role of uber intelligence?
No. I'm saying that I think, without saying so, the commission is saying that the Department of Homeland Security, whatever experiment that was, it's presently not working. And I think part of the response, both the structural fix of the intelligence community and then, of course, many of the recommendations they make regarding Homeland Security, were to push a new agency that seems to have not done much in about 15 or 16 months.
I want to begin to bring our callers in. Vinny is calling from New York City. Hi, Vinny. You're on the air.
Hi. I have an idea, and tell me what you think.
Okay.
They keep talking. The changes cannot be brought about because there'll be turf battles. There'll be budget battles. And I think, well, we got everything in place. We have Tom Ridge. If every agency, they say there are about 22 agencies collecting information.
Yep.
Say each agency is asked to appoint a high-level official and give that official all the wherewithal and access to all the information in that particular agency pertaining to terrorism.
And to do what with it, Vinny?
Pass that information on to Tom Ridge.
So you say make Tom Ridge the top guy. Let us pick that up. Stansfield Turner, take us in more specifically to how this would work. How do you see it? You're saying it could be the director of CIA who fills this new role, and yet I'm seeing others today saying he's already too darn busy. So how exactly would this new super intelligence position work?
No, I'm saying that we should divide the two jobs, the director of Central Intelligence who coordinates the entire intelligence apparatus, the 15 agencies,
okay,
and the head of CIA being a separate person. Now, what we're missing, I believe, in a lot of the discussion today, is that the President of the United States can do most of what the recommendations are from this report on his own. For instance, President Jimmy Carter, and I take no credit for this because it was his idea and his initiative, he gave me more authority over the intelligence community than any director has had before or since. He gave me the authority to prepare and submit the budgets for all the intelligence agencies and to set the priorities for what the intelligence agencies worked on, what they collected intelligence on. Those authorities have all been taken back to the Defense Department ever since. But the President Carter did not go to the Congress to get permission to do that. Those are things that are within the scope of the executive department.
So just act
in
on
addition,
it. Just do it. Yeah.
I took and delegated to my deputy, Frank Carlucci, almost the total authority to run the CIA as much as I could and within the law. In short, if the president wants it, he can have, in effect, a CIA director and a director of Central Intelligence or National Intelligence tomorrow by just telling them, you, the deputy, run the CIA, you run the community. And he can give the director of National Intelligence a lot more authority than he or she has today, and we will be way down this track. I am terribly worried. We're not showing a sense of national urgency here. Mm-hmm. The terrorists are not sitting back waiting for us to debate this, mm-hmm, and the Congress is going to go out of session soon. We're going to have an election. If we wait to do all this through a congressional law or
right,
whatever, we're going to be well into next summer.
Easy.
And that's just unacceptable.
Mm. Juliet Kayyem, join us here. We heard earlier from David Sanger saying he sat down with Condoleezza Rice today. She immediately said, well, a lot of this the White House can't do, the president can't do, it's the Congress. So, who can pull the trigger on this kind of high-level structural responsibilities? And B, what about the idea of making the director of Central Intelligence, as opposed to the operations head of the CIA, fill this role right away? Is the Pentagon, which, as David pointed out, now has something like 90% of the intelligence budget,
right,
ever going to stand for that?
No, I don't think this Pentagon will. I mean, I think it's going to take a president. I mean, I think Stansfield Turner is right that you could do a lot of this. In fact, if you look at just the recommendations, just the executive summary, I would say almost 90% of it can be done by executive fiat. In fact, the biggest challenge for Congress is its own reorganization, which is a separate issue, but the sort of assessment by the commission that Congress needed to change itself. So I think most of it can be done by executive fiat, and I think the sort of punt by Condoleezza Rice today and the sort of, you know, we'll look at the recommendations and think about them by the White House suggest we're not going to see much. And I think that is unfortunate, not see much for the next 6 or 7 months. In that respect, while the commission tried very hard to be bipartisan today and sort of opened up with, you know, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, and everyone's to blame and therefore no one's to blame, I did think that a lot of the comments today at the press conference suggesting if something did occur between now and the election, there's only one person to blame. And without saying it, of course, they mean President Bush. I thought that was probably one of the most powerful statements coming from the commission today that we gave you a bye the first time. You were only in office 9 months.
But you're on notice now.
You're on notice. And I thought that to me, hearing that was a very powerful, slightly partisan wake-up call. The other moment I thought was when Keene said, 911 families, thank you. You pushed for us here. It was a not-so-subtle critique of how long it took this White House to get this very important commission together.
And we're going to hear from that constituency. Frank is calling from Fairfield, New Jersey. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hello. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening.
I have a quick comment and then a question for your panel.
Yes.
The comment is, I think what's occurring here is we're not seeing the moral courage of our government and others to step up and look, face the elephant in the room, which no one wants to admit, which is our relationship with the Middle East, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and others. Right now, our sole policy to the Middle East is violence. They attack us, we attack them. There's no diplomacy at all. And now my question for your panel is, why won't they say the word Secretary of Intelligence? Put that person on par with the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of whatever it may be, and give them the power to control all intelligence gathering capability, the budget, everything else. That is what we're looking for here.
Frank, we've got it. Stephen Flynn, they put that to you. Stansfield Turner says, you could do that tomorrow. Take the director of Central Intelligence, parse his duties away from running the CIA, but overseeing it instead, and presto, you'd have it. Why not?
Well, I think the Admiral is right that a lot could happen by real top-down direction from the president in terms of really setting priorities and banging some heads together. But here's one of the critical issues that I worry about. We don't have much intelligence about today or capacity to develop in some of the sectors that are most for me, most worrisome. There are very few people in the intelligence community, in the FBI or the CIA, who understand, for instance, our energy systems and how it operates, that understand the maritime transportation system. I won't tell you the precise numbers of people who were involved in this in the agency, but let's say they're minuscule, and they were cut in half to look for weapons of mass destruction when we were trying to deal with that in Iraq. The fact is, the most likely area where terrorists are likely to appear and to target are things that there are very few people trained in government today within the FBI or the CIA, because the people understand those systems best are in the private sector. They own and operate them. Or often they're cops on the beat kinds of guys, or Coast Guard or customs agents or food inspectors that spot things that are funny. Mm. And one of the things that just simply hasn't happened is we haven't broadened the eyes and ears. There's all this discussion about whether the FBI is sharing and CIA. Well, the fact is, there's very little intelligence in the closet to share.
Stephen Flynn, if you could stand by for just a moment. We've got to take a short break. Juliet Kayyem, Stansfield Turner, we have these conversations, and somehow we never end up comforted, but we want to be. We want to get the right thing done here. What do you think? Is there the national will to reconfigure for an age of new threats? Is the country adapting quickly enough to keep up with those threats? Can it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the future of American national security, as recommended today by the 9/11 Commission. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? Will today's recommendations be implemented or shelved? And which is ultimately the greater challenge, revamping America's security institutions or winning over the Islamic world? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The chairman of the 9/11 Commission, Tom Kaine, talked today about the family members of the 9/11 victims who pushed so hard for the work of this commission.
We close, most importantly, by thanking the families who lost loved ones on 9/11. You demanded the creation of this commission. You have encouraged us every step of the way as partners and as witnesses. From your grief, you have drawn strength. You have given that strength to us. And we are determined, as you instructed us, to do everything possible to prevent other families from ever suffering such a tragedy again.
Chairman Tom Kaine today. We are joined tonight by Admiral Stansfield Turner, former director of the CIA, by Stephen Flynn, senior fellow for national security at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of America the Vulnerable, and by Juliet Kayyem, senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and right now from Princeton, New Jersey, by Nikki Stern. She is executive director of Families of September 11th. Her husband, James Patori, was vice president of Marsh McLennan. He was killed on September 11th in the World Trade Center. Nikki Stern, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So there it is, the product of a lot of work by the 9/11 Commission and a lot of work of survivors of 9/11 victims like yourself who pushed so hard for this. Are you satisfied with the outcome today?
I feel like it's the first step on a different kind of a road. I am pleased and not surprised that the commissioner noted that we had had pushed and made reference to the families. I appreciate that because I think that the key issue here is making sure that other people, insofar as possible, don't have to go through what we had to go through.
Do you think any of this would have happened, this commission and this report, if it weren't for the political power that you all had in the aftermath of 9/11? Did it take your push to get President Bush and the rest of Washington signing off here?
Well, I think that our push probably was somewhat decisive. I think the truth is yet to be fully revealed because obviously we want to make this commission report different from other commission reports because we want to see clearly that recommendations are acted upon.
And what about accountability in today's report? There was talk about responsibility, but also, a kind of diffused responsibility here. Did your group want to see heads rolling? Do you think that responsibility has been adequately outlined today?
I think one of our other directors, who I also watched on television today, put it pretty accurately. I mean, at this point, many of the people who may have been responsible on some level who have been overseeing certain agencies may have left or quietly resigned. I think the issue, and I don't want to get into too much of a semantics discussion, but there is a difference between blame and accountability. Mm. And I think going forward, what we need, and that's why all this discussion about a single point of accountability is you need someone to say the buck stops here. This has to go through me, it has to work because of me, and I have to be the one responsible and to take responsibility if it doesn't work.
And Nikki Stern, finally, you lost a husband mm-hmm. on September 11th, 2001. Mm-hmm. As we sit here tonight, do you have a sense of confidence that the United States is moving to reconfigure in strategy, in structure, so that that doesn't happen again? Or are you worried we're as vulnerable as ever and may remain that way for too long?
Well, as someone that sort of specializes in trying to synthesize an outline and reduce to its easiest common denominator a lot of the things that come into my office and my head, I will remain cautiously optimistic if I can also encourage people out there to prioritize as the agencies, governments, and people responsible have to prioritize. We can't do everything all at once. As it's been discussed here, it could be decades before some things take place. But there are very clearly specific recommendations relating to transportation security and preparedness and responsiveness that could be initiated very quickly. And I think start with those things and then continue the dialogue and move along.
Sounds like you're going to be watching.
Yeah.
Nikki Stern, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Nikki Stern, Executive Director of Families of September 11th. John is calling from New York City. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yeah, I watched the towers go down, and I am just wondering, regardless of where the attackers came from, if they came from the Girl Scouts, if they came from the Elks Club, or if they came from who knows where, who was supposed to be protecting us? From our mayor to our governor to our president to the head of the army, and didn't, and who is supposed to be reading not only this report, but the Gore report on air security that was completed before the new administration, and the two other reports among, I think there's seven or eight reports that have been written on similar themes. Just as far as protecting the two most obvious sites for attack by anybody, by a kook from Oklahoma City.
And you're still wondering whose job was it?
Who was supposed to protect those buildings from anybody.
John, we've got it. Let me put it to Admiral Stansfield Turner. Admiral Turner, here we are almost 3 years after 9/11, and a New Yorker who watched the towers come down. You know, you can hear still wanting to know whose responsibility was that. And I have to say, at the end of this day, there's still a kind of vagueness about that here.
Well, I think there's no question that ultimately the responsibility has to be put on the shoulders of the president. He bears that load.
But which president?
Well, the incumbent when the event happened. But that doesn't mean that he bears the whole load. He has that responsibility by virtue of his office. But unfortunately, in our vast bureaucracy, the actual responsibility for the specific actions that were not taken, like bringing all the information together, is very diffuse. It's spread around with an awful lot of people. One of the problems today, I think, is that we aren't holding people responsible. Nobody's been fired that I know of as a result of the failure at 9/11. Nobody's been fired because of the terrible thing you just mentioned a little while ago at Abu Ghraib in Iraq. We are not accustomed to holding people personally responsible, and I think we need to.
Stephen Flynn, do you think the report today went as far as it could have in terms of pinning accountability? Could it have gone farther? Where?
Well, I think they had to do the necessary job of dodging that bullet because of the need, the real sense of needing to look forward, and particularly in the height of a political season. And I think looking forward is central. But they have some recommendations. They wanted people to focus on that. And they're quite right, I think, in saying that that's where our attention should be directed. You know, it really – there's so much energy that's going into Washington that's just being diffused around the finger-pointing and so forth. And this is a Republican problem. It's not a Democratic problem. It's an American problem, and it's one of long-standing. But we're still not coming to grips with it. And that's my real frustration. If somebody worked on the U.S. Commission, National Security, the Hart Rubin Commission, in advance of 9/11, January 31st, 2001, we said that the number one national security challenge for the 21st century for the United States will be catastrophic terrorism on U.S. soil. We're not prepared to deal with it. And that still remains the case today.
Robert's calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Robert Haynes here, Republican for President of the United States of America. I was at the hearing with Lee Hamilton regarding Aldrich Ames, the CIA mall.
Yes.
And I'm also, I was at the 9/11 Commission hearings. I sat behind Richard Clark, and I sat right near the 9/11 spouses. And when Richard Clark said that the government failed to protect us from Al-Qaeda, I walked out. I didn't need to hear anything more. And I was interviewed by Scripps Howard News Service. I told them flat out that Presidents Bush and Clinton were in dereliction of duty and they were negligent as commanders-in-chief. We don't need one person supervising a security agency. We need two people or more because Robert Hansen, for example, chief of counterintelligence for the FBI, was actually working for the Russians.
So you want more than one hand on the wheel there. Robert, thanks for your call. Juliet Kamen, we should take us on down the list of recommendations here. We've got the top sort of idea of a new top intelligence coordinator and maybe a top intelligence coordination agency.
Right.
But what are the other sort of still to-do list items at the top here?
Well, let me start with the not-to-do list, which was kind of surprising. There had been rumors about creating an internal domestic agency along the lines of MI5. Most of us thought that's where the commission was going to go. That, to me, was one of the biggest surprises. They got a lot of testimony opposing it for a variety of levels. One, I think it's absolutely not necessary. And two, that there were ways to restructure the FBI. So the positive recommendation is I'm forgetting the name offhand, I apologize, but the new FBI intelligence integration.
Right, but explain what that would have been, an MI5 kind of organization. This is like the UK's that does essentially spying at home.
Right, and basically MI5, I'm going to be pretty crude here, but MI5 is probably not subject to the same sort of domestic laws of intelligence gathering that sort of our police are, for example, including some of the constitutional prohibitions. And I think the thought was animating that was, well, Britain has had an internal terrorism problem. It's Ireland. It's a little bit more complicated than that. And they sort of deal with it with MI5 and having much greater domestic surveillance at home internally. Maybe we should replicate that vis-a-vis the FBI. Well, one, the FBI doesn't have a very good track record in terms of being able to balance the liberty and security issues. And I think a lot of the complaints that the commissioners heard from, John McGaffin, your previous guest, was one of them, who said, don't do this, knew sort of the FBI needed to be more in check. And secondly, the idea that MI5 is some model is kind of funny if you know MI5 very well. It doesn't do, it has as many flaws in terms of intelligence gathering as our FBI does.
So instead we've got this national security workforce within the FBI.
Right, that's going to be more focused on sort of prioritizing and assessing the domestic intelligence that it does receive, and then getting that to the right entities. Both that and some of the changes from the Patriot Act will permit sort of greater intelligence sharing between those who spy outside the U.S. and then those clearly who are spying within the U.S.
So what else on the to-do list today, Juliet?
Congressional reform, absolutely important. It's something I've written about. It was so obvious. Four years ago when the National Commission on Terrorism came out, the Hart-Redmond Commission also mentioned it, that the way Congress oversees intelligence and now, of course, Homeland Security, where something like 40 subcommittees or committees of both the Senate and the House have oversight. Talk about no one in charge. I mean, it's a ridiculous system. No one has control of the complete budget. No one knows what the priorities are.
But is Congress ever going to be effective at that kind of oversight?
It could be. I really do believe it could be. I mean, the intelligence, for example, the Senate Intelligence Committee's report a month ago was pretty good. I mean, for all of its flaws that it didn't really touch on some of the political aspects of how we got into war in Iraq, if you actually read that report, it's a pretty good report. That's what Congress should do. It should oversee, it should review, it should analyze. It can't do it in its present form with the Department of Homeland Security. And certainly, it's going to have problems on the intelligence side. That is key. And I'm, like everyone else that you're talking to tonight, I'm not incredibly optimistic that Congress, without push from either the outside or push internally, is gonna voluntarily change its division of labor. But that's something not talked about a lot. And I was glad.
Sounds like it's key to your mind, Stanfield Turner. We've just got a minute or so left here. You've got an awful lot of experience as you sit here tonight, looking at the report that's come out today. Let me put the same question to you: do you see the momentum coming out of this report, the work that's been done in Washington, to make the changes necessary to make the country really safer, or is it going to take another big attack?
I'm always an optimist, and therefore I'm going to answer your question by saying I think I feel the momentum beginning to build. And I take most pleasure in the fact that you had Nikki Stern on the program tonight, and we have seen the American democratic process work through people like Nikki Stern. She and her family's group have pushed and pushed, and what have we got? We've got response from the government. The president didn't want this commission. I don't know whether the Congress wanted it or not, but we got the commission because of the American democratic political process. And I'm hopeful that that same process is going to carry us to take some of these important recommendations and do something with them.
Well, listeners, that means stay tuned and stay involved and keep on it. Stanfield Turner, former director of the CIA, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
And Stephen Flynn, author of America the Vulnerable, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Juliet Kayyem, senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.